Thank you for joining us for our Tech Law 10. This week, it's slightly out of the usual. I'm Jonathan Armstrong. I'm normally in London, but I'm sitting here in Times Square. And Eric, why not introduce yourself?
And this is Eric Sinrod with Dwayne Morris calling in from the West Coast, the best coast, San Francisco, California.
And Eric, this week we were going to talk about digital footprints. That's been getting your attention this week. What's the issue?
Sure, and actually I'm publishing my fine law blog this week on the topic. The real question is, you know, how long should our digital footprints live on into the future? You know, once upon a time, our communications essentially disappeared into the ether. If I were talking to you, Jonathan, you know, face-to-face, you know, you would hear what I would have to say, and then it would be gone. It wouldn't be recorded. Of course, nowadays, you know, so much of our communications are recorded electronically in so many different areas. And the question then arises, you know, how long should that information exist, and when and under what circumstances, you know, should it be purged? And, you know, one context we can think about is, for example, you know, teenagers who are frolicking on Facebook. You know, they're posting, you know, pictures of themselves online, perhaps videos. They're saying things back and forth. They could be doing this also, you know, through emails and otherwise. And then the person grows up. And, you know, we all, as individuals, do evolve. And at some point, you might want to have a different definition of yourself. But what if what you said in the past or how you behaved in the past that was recorded electronically comes back to haunt you? And, and is that a good thing? And under what circumstances should information be retained, and when should it be dispensed with?
You know, that reminds me. I wrote an article on this about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. One of the cases we had in the UK in the early days was some Oxford University students, and they have a fairly unique way of celebrating the end of the exams, and traditionally they used to give a flower to each of the people who were sitting the exams at the beginning, and then at the end they started this sort of celebrating the end of the exam tradition, if you like, which got a little bit out of hand, and some of the Oxford colleges started disciplining students, in one case for throwing dead octopus parts over another student, and the photographs had been uploaded onto Facebook, I think. I wrote a small article about it, and then had a phone call from my niece, who said, you ought to know, if you're going to write about this stuff, that I'm in the back of the photograph. I wasn't the thrower of the octopus, but I was a partial recipient. So I think a lot of lot of people do things that they regret. In Europe, it's even the German legislators have been looking at this issue. There's some draft legislation. My pronunciation is going to be horrendous, but the Beschäftigten's Datenschutzgesetz, I think it's called, where the German authorities are looking at this exactly. I mean, the line that they seem to be drawing is that open media, so things like newspapers, magazines, Google searches, are allowed to be accessed by employers when they're looking at job history. But personal data, so Facebook, anything password protected, wouldn't. I wonder if that's, do we think that's a useful dividing line, or
sure.
I guess it is a big issue.
It is a very big issue. I mean, it could be divided that way. It could be divided by how old the information is, and at what point, as a matter of time, does somebody have the right to start over, essentially, in terms of who they are. And then another question arises as to whether consumers should and users should even have a choice. Should there be a choice given to them as they go online or operate electronically in terms of how long their data should be preserved? I should mention that here in the United States, there are some legal requirements. If you're in certain regulated industries, there are laws that say that a company must retain certain categories of information for certain minimum periods of time. But then the question arises, well, how long after that should the information be retained? Or if there's the prospect or actuality of litigation, there's an affirmative requirement to preserve information relevant to the lawsuit, so you don't get into a situation where you essentially are accused of spoliating or destroying relevant evidence, which can be a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another thing where European data protection legislation would probably come into play as well. There's an obligation under the legislation in most countries over in Europe that would say that you can't maintain the data once it's no longer accurate and out of date. And I suspect for a lot of sites, that is an issue. I suspect that there is virtually no site that's going to review content on an ongoing basis and destroy the older stuff. But maybe if they received notice that the user wanted that data to be removed, they would act. I think the other issue, though, is just the spread of that information. I was looking last night, for example, for a photograph of a particular thing typed it into Google, and incredibly found a photograph that I'd taken myself on a site. I'd uploaded it onto a social networking site, and some site has been crawling those profiles that are theoretically password protected and taking those images and putting them in a big archive. So that was sort of, you know, a shock moment to me. And I guess that's the other issue. Not only is there a lot of information that's out there about us and it's out of date, but we don't really know where it is either, do we?
Well, that's exactly right. So even if there were the idea that, okay, you know, this category of information no longer should be retained, you know, how, as a matter of scope, you know, depth and breadth and technology, do you actually make sure it does disappear? And as I think a lot of us who are involved in, you know, legal litigation matters know, that even information that we believe or someone believes has been deleted, you know, can be sleuthed and recovered in various ways if somebody wants to go to the burden and the expense of it all. I suppose another thought, too, though, is that, you know, perhaps some of the shock value of information goes down over time. You know, perhaps, you know, in the beginning of, you know, social networking pages like, you know, MySpace and Facebook and the like, if, you know, you saw a teenager with, you know, a beer can in their hand, you know, oh, perhaps that would be cause for concern when that person might apply to college or for a job if somehow that was on their public profile or otherwise available. But, you know, maybe as we're moving along, the shock value just goes down because there's just so much content out there that exemplifies so many different types of behavior that really, you know, what people do is not viewed as negatively, even if it's not saintly, if you will.
Yes. But there are other things, aren't there? I can remember, I may have told you this already, Eric, but in the late 90s, I was involved in some patent litigation over a particular, it was over boilers, and this is public knowledge, it's a reported case. And so we're being sued by somebody who says that their boiler is novel and it's revolutionary and my clients infringed it. And they had a proto-social networking site, the people who were suing us, and it was hopeless in a lot of ways. But this site was meant to be for installers of their boilers to connect with each other and learn more about the products. There were 9 postings, I think, in total on the entire site. I believe 7 of them, from memory, were from employees of the people who are suing us, you know, and it's the most, you know, almost useless social media application you've seen, and doubly useless because one of the questions from one of the boiler installers was really how new is this technology, because I'm not comfortable installing it because it looks very new and it's not worth the effort for me. And in reply, one of the technical guys at the plaintiff had replied, do you know, we say it's new, but none of this is really that new. You won't have any problem installing it. Now, obviously, from my point of view, that's like discovering diamonds if you're in the litigation process. You've got something from an employee of the entity reassuring people that while they maintain the public perception of it being new, it isn't. So I suspect you're absolutely right that you've got to look at the litigation angles as well as just the, you know, the reputation and how do I feel about this information being seen in years to come.
Yes. Well, this is an interesting topic, and obviously the dialogue here is just beginning. We are calling this Tech Law 10, so we try to keep this to 10 minutes, so we're going to sign off at this point. We certainly look forward to hearing from you in terms of any comments or questions about this particular audio cast or ideas you might have for future ones. Our contact information is as follows. I'm Eric Sinrod at Duane Morris. It's E.J. Sinrod, E-J-S-I-N-R-O-D at Duane Morris, D-U-A-N-E, Morris.com. And Jonathan, your contact information?
So I'm Jonathan Armstrong, J.P. Armstrong at DwayneMorris.com. You can find us both on LinkedIn and Twitter.
And as I said before, and also Facebook. So we'll sign off for now. We'll talk to you again the next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening.